This is a behind-the-scenes look at Sex, Lies, and Vampires, the third Dark Ones novel, which was published February 2005. I will discuss some points which may be spoilers for this book, so if you haven't read it yet, you may want to hold off on listening to this podcast. The two main protagonists in Sex, Lies, and Vampires had a bit of a different start than previous Dark Ones books. A friend of mine asked me to write a hero just for her, one who was emotionally scarred, had dark secrets, and who was pretty much as tormented as you can get without actually being insane. Since I have always been intrigued by characters who appear to be villains while really bearing heroic traits, I was delighted to sit down and work up the basis for Adrian the Betrayer. He was my first real anti-hero. A hero in that he did things which might not appear in a heroic light to some. I threw just about everything I could at poor Adrian. He was cursed and bound to a demon lord. He had been abandoned by his father in favor of his twin, and had a child by his brother's beloved. Worst of all, he was shunned by his own people for the acts he was forced to commit against them. You just don't get much more dark hero than that. Nell, the heroine, came about after some thought of what type of woman would be able to see through all of the smoke to the real man underneath. I wanted Nell to have a bit of a dark past herself, so that she would have a basis for understanding what hell Adrian had gone through. But as with all my female characters, I wanted to make her a survivor, not a victim. I didn't set about to make her physically disabled in the way Allegra was in Sex and the Single Vampire, but as I was working up Nell's past, the stroke that changed her life emerged as an underlying element in her character. It made for some wonderful internal conflict when she had to make choices between her own survival and Adrian's. I had great fun when I finally got the two of them together. Adrian's doom-and-gloom martyred attitude did its best to impress Nell with the dark tragedy that was his life, but her irreverence and refusal to buy into his old betrayer thing drove him absolutely nuts. And there's just nothing I like more than a heroine who cheerfully knocks down all of the angsty walls of protection a hero has built around himself. One of the things I looked forward to with this book was presenting Christian in a bit of a different light, at least at first. Christian had been a favorite of my readers, and as I wanted to play a bit with the perception of good and evil in this book, I felt it would be appropriate to have the two main protagonists view him in a wholly different light from what readers were used to. Christian is Christian, though, and even I, with my best intentions to make him look sinister, had to, in the end, allow his true self to shine. Sex, Lies, and Vampires gave me the opportunity to visit one of my favorite spots in London, the British Museum. The mummies mentioned in the book are all fictional, with the exception of Ginger, who is based on the British Museum's famous red-haired mummy. I remembered seeing him from my last trip to London and decided that Ginger had to make a guest appearance in the book. Who doesn't love mummies? Somehow, though, he ended up bringing along some friends. This was the first book in which we find out about charmers and how curses and wards can be unmade. Ever since Sex and the Single Vampire, when Allie started drawing wards in the air, I had a very clear picture in my mind of just what they looked like. Intricate Celtic knots with some extra twiddly bits thrown in. I liked the idea that the power of the ward came not from the actual ward itself, but from the drawer's belief in his or her own power and abilities. It's always seemed to me that magic comes from within an individual and is not just the result of the happenstance of jumbling a few words together in a proper order. Wards allowed me to explore that concept in a little more detail. When it came time to show wards and curses could be unmade, it made just as much sense that the same power that made them could unmake them, namely that they could be charmed by someone who had a natural ability to unravel knots of the metaphysical rather than physical origin. I get questions about whether or not Belinda, the mother of Adrian's son and beloved to his twin, ever found her own happiness. What I find interesting is that few people ask how Serre could end up being so self-centered that he could disregard the woman who literally saved him. I guess the answer lies with the fact that he was just such a bastard to poor Belinda, no one really cared that he got what was coming to him. Oh, and the answer to that question is yes. I do plan to include Belinda in another story and find a happy ending for her. Her future isn't nearly as bleak as it might seem. Here's a little bit of trivia for you. Adrian's son, Damien, was named for the character in The Omen. As soon as Adrian informed me he had a child, I knew that he was going to be nothing but trouble for poor Nell. She was not a particularly maternal person, and finding out she just bound herself to a man who had an obnoxious child who disliked her on sight just seemed like too good an opportunity to miss. I felt that women readers with kids might appreciate the fact that Nell's last words in the book concerned a boarding school for Damien. Thanks for taking the time to listen to this behind-the-scenes podcast for Sex, Lies, and Vampires. If you'd like more information about the Dark Ones or the other world, pop over to katiemcallister.com or dragonsepts.com. And feel free to drop me a line if you have questions at katie@katiemcallister.com.